A podcast that digs up the things you watched when you were little, talks about them, and throws a party to watch them. I'm your host, Bailey Moore, and as the returning guest host for the last Halloween special for this year, my sister and the one true princess from episode 4, Chaney Moore.
Hi, everyone.
Thank you so much for being here.
You know, I'm getting a little used to this. I'm going to expect to be the guest all the time.
You know, you ask and you might receive. So what are you going to do on Halloween?
Well, we already talked about this.
I asked you what you were doing to prepare for Halloween. Did I ask you what you're doing on Halloween proper?
You might have asked what I'm going to do to prepare for it, but I told you what we're doing, which is the 24-hour movie Zoom.
Oh, that's right. Well, yeah. I really just wanted to talk about what I was going to do on Halloween, but I thought it would be polite if I asked you first.
Bailey, what are you doing for Halloween?
Well, thank you so much for asking.
You're welcome.
I'm going to Shock the Votes Halloween party that includes a double feature drive-in movie showing the original Halloween and the 2018 remake. The event is socially distanced and COVID safe. I've gone to the last few drive-in events and it was so, so, so much fun. Shock the Vote is a nonpartisan community building campaign aiming to energize the city of Austin. They've been spending all month featuring and promoting Austin local businesses and nonprofits, and 80% of the ticket sales go to their 6 partnering nonprofits. So if you are in the Austin area and you are looking for something to do on Halloween, check out Shock the Vote and know that along with having fun, you are also supporting the Austin community. You can find information about it on shockthevoteatx.com.
I'll tell you what, if I were in Austin, I would definitely go.
It's going to be really fun. There's going to be a costume contest and other stuff that I don't remember.
I don't know. There's something magical about watching horror movies from your car. Nick and I, we drove to, I don't remember why we were up north, but we stopped in Ennis, which is where the big drive-thru is. Mm-hmm. And we watched the new Friday the 13th movie.
Yeah.
And it was just so fun. I don't know. The danger element is there, I guess, because you're exposed and out in the open. It's just exciting.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Last week, they showed Pet Sematary.
Hmm.
It's not my favorite horror movie, but I had blankets in the back of my car and pillows. And honestly, it felt kind of like Friday night, movie night, renting a VHS and bringing it home and watching it from a pallet on the floor. That's what it felt like. It was so much fun.
That's fun. Yeah, I like that.
So, before we continue with this final Halloween special, a couple things. First, a correction.
Correction.
Yeah, correction. I've been rewatching all of the episodes of Are You Afraid of the Dark, and there are definitely Halloween episodes. I am only in season 3, but so far, The Tale of the Twisted Claw and The Tale of the Midnight Ride both take place on Halloween, so I'm sorry about that. I hope the last episode was okay anyway.
Wow, Bailey, you really should do your research.
Yeah.
See, it's a joke because you always do your research.
Well, just not enough, apparently. But it's really hard just to do the little that I do. It just takes up so much time. So secondly, I wanted to thank James Cross and Jonathan Rogers for listening and sharing the Witch's Night Out episode. It meant so much to us. They sent us a piece of art with the characters of any town listening to and reacting to our podcast episode. And I seriously didn't know what to do with myself for a couple days. I was so excited.
It's so incredibly special, and it made me so happy that they didn't hate us for me calling him Banjo-Kazooie when his name is Bazooie.
It was funny.
Well, apparently they thought so too. It was really, really exciting that they listened to it and then responded and drew a picture. That's amazing.
Yeah, I'm just beside myself. Okay, so let's get to it. I asked the socials what people wanted to listen to, and by unanimous consensus, the people wanted the Halloween special Tiny Toons Night Ghoulery. Now, we both love Tiny Toons, is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What was your favorite portion of Night Ghoulery, just out of curiosity?
Well, it had been probably about 15 years since I had seen it. I only remembered the vacuum one and the devil dog. Those were the two things that I remembered most. And I think that that's the vacuum one was the one that I favored. I don't know. Plucky is so funny.
Yes.
I think he's my favorite Tiny Toon, at least as an adult. I recently watched Summer Vacation again as well, and he's just so funny.
Yes, because he's so self-centered. He's very funny. He's definitely one of my favorite characters as well. Yeah, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Telltale Vacuum, because that is also my favorite portion. I was just curious if it was also yours.
Yeah.
So for those that might want to watch this at home, Tiny Toons Night Ghoulery is found online streaming from Twitch, or if you have a subscription, it's also available on Hulu. All right, so in the words of Plucky Duck, well then, my friend, let us sit and enjoy some meaningless chit-chat.
Are you going to speak normally in this thing at all? What is it that ham...
Just stick to the script, ham bone.
Yeah, there's so many good one-liners, and I unfortunately watched it really, really late at night, or I would have written them down, but I just enjoyed it so much. I enjoyed it so much.
It's really great. Just for a little bit of background before we get into the special itself, Tiny Toons was conceived in the late 80s to be a revamp of the Looney Tunes series in the midst of a bunch of other similar cartoons. If you remember Muppet Babies, A Pup Named Scooby-Doo, Flintstones Kids, and even Tom and Jerry Kids. So that was kind of a trend of taking these classic characters and making them babies. The thing that they did differently was that they made all of the characters of Tiny Toons the offspring of the classic characters.
Which I think was highly successful.
Oh, yeah. I think it's an incredibly imaginative show. And I still love it so much.
Personally, I like it better than Looney Tunes. I think it's funnier than Looney Tunes.
I cannot agree with you there, but...
That's why I said personally.
I think that they are both really great within the context of the time that they were in. Okay, so Tiny Toons ran for three seasons from 1990 to 1992 and was canceled to make way for Animaniacs, which a lot of the same vocal talent was involved in both, and I believe a lot of the same team of writers and animators also went on to Animaniacs.
That's a shame because they're both good, so you can't be mad, but right. At the same time, it's a shame.
Yeah, I think it was just too costly to try to do both.
Yeah.
So the Tiny Toons Night Ghoulery special was aired in 1994, after Animaniacs had already been airing for over a year. And it was the last TV appearance of the Tiny Toons cast of characters. But this explains why there are cameo appearances of the characters from Animaniacs in the special. Did you catch both of them?
I got Brain.
Yes.
I don't think I caught the other one.
Okay, the other one is a little bit more obscure, but it's Baloney the Dinosaur. He's standing in line to get an autograph from Mr. Scratch the Devil.
Oh, yeah, I missed that.
Now, Tiny Toons Night Ghoulery is a massive showcase of parody. I don't have a lot of specific facts about the creation of the special, but I thought we could go through the things that are parodied and discuss their significance in pop culture.
Sure.
All right, so firstly, the presentation of the whole episode, which exists even in the title, is a parody of Night Gallery. Babs Bunny serves as the host, which, personally, I think is a great choice out of all the cast of characters because it really allows Tress MacNeille, the voice actor, to showcase her incredible vocal talents and all her impersonations.
Yeah, all of her range is massive.
Yes, amazing. And do you know who she voices in Animaniacs?
No.
She's Dot.
Oh, and that would have been my guess. I just didn't know. Yeah.
So Night Gallery is an anthology series like The Twilight Zone, also created and hosted by Rod Serling, that aired from 1969 to 1973 and covered macabre and supernatural subjects, whereas Twilight Zone was primarily science fiction. Have you ever watched Night Gallery?
Mm-mm.
I've only watched a few episodes. I'd be interested in watching more, especially realizing that Rod Serling is also the host for that. But I saw a few in college, but the one I remember the most is one I don't even think I've seen, because our dad told us the story when we were kids, and it scared me so much, and it scared him when he saw it. So it's about a prisoner that makes a deal with the prison doctor to smuggle him out of the prison by hiding in the next coffin that goes out of the prison, and that the doctor would come and dig him up. So the guy gets in the coffin and hears them like carting away the coffin and nailing the coffin shut and then burying the coffin. And then while he's waiting for the doctor to dig him up, he decides to roll over and see who his bunk buddy is while he's waiting.
It's the doctor!
It's the doctor. Dun, 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 dun.
Oops. Best laid plans.
Best laid corpses. Yeah, so moving on. For some reason, this is not included on the Hulu version, but there's an intro to this Halloween special. Did you watch it on Twitch?
No, I watched it on Hulu.
Okay. So there's an intro to this Halloween special that's a parody of Nightmare Before Christmas, where Jack Pumpkinhead is singing to the moon and finds the trees with all the doors to different holidays, and one of them is the Tiny Toon symbol. Hmm. And he goes up to the tree with the Tiny Toon symbol. It smashes on top of him, and then all of the Tiny Toons gang start singing the theme song, but a lot of the lyrics are changed to be Halloween-y. Mm. And I don't know why that's not included in the Hulu version at all, but I wonder if it's because Disney stepped in, since they own Nightmare Before Christmas and they also are a primary owner of Hulu. But if so, if that is the case, stop ruining the fun, Disney.
Yeah.
We like your content, but you don't have the monopoly on fun. All right, the first story, like you said before, both of our favorites, The Telltale Vacuum, which is a parody of what?
Telltale Heart.
Yes, The Telltale Heart by Edgar Allan Poe. And just in case you don't know, it's a short story delivered from the perspective of a madman that kills his roommate because he has an eye that he doesn't like and buries the body under the floorboards. He thinks he has gotten away with it, but is driven to reveal his deed because he hears the beating of the old man's heart beneath the floorboards. So, instead of a heart, it's a vacuum.
Yes, naturally.
Yeah, naturally. So, like you said before, like, this segment is very cleverly written. And I think it's the language that makes this part so funny. Mm-hmm. And it actually borrows a lot of the rhythm from the source material, The Telltale Heart, and even borrows certain lines directly from the short story, but then gives them a comedic spin. And I have long thought, because I've loved this so much forever, I've long thought, you know, as the scholar of humor that I am.
Yes.
That this segment could be used as a lesson on comedy's rule of three. Mm-hmm. Because it happens over and over again. And I wrote down a couple just to prove my point.
I have one that's my favorite of the show, of that segment.
If I don't say it, then you say it, okay? Mad, you say? Crazy, you say? Slightly unbalanced in the face of opposition, you say, if you had the time? Is that it?
No, but that was my second favorite.
Okay, and then the other one that I have written down is, and my care in disposing of the remains was so meticulous, so cunning, so really, really good. Was that it?
No.
What was yours?
I can't remember the exact words, so it's going to be paraphrasing a little bit, but... Oh, the horror. Oh, the torture. Oh, what a feeling, Toyota. Yeah.
I think one of my favorite lines in this part is like, would a madman do this? Don't answer that. That made me laugh so hard.
Yeah, I laughed several times during that segment. It's just so cleverly written, like you said.
Well, and then it has the great twist at the end, just like a Twilight Zone episode, where Hampton says money won't be necessary, but you're gonna have to replace it, and then Plucky is actually replacing the vacuum by performing the function of the vacuum. And I feel like Plucky's expression as the vacuum cleaner is just perfect. Yeah, just imagine like being forced to suck against carpet and floor and being rammed into the wall. And
then, of course, it ends with, Now to add the attachments.
Da, 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 da. All right, so the next one. Sneezer the Sneezy Ghost.
He's my soul spirit.
He's your soul spirit.
We both have allergies like nobody's business.
Aww. You always sneezing and repelling people?
I feel like if I come back as a ghost, you'll know because I'll sneeze all the time.
Oh, just like the ghost of Mr. Boogity.
Yeah, yeah. Jonathan.
So this is a parody of what?
Oh, Casper, obviously.
Again, for anybody that does not know, Casper the Friendly Ghost is a ghost that wants to make friends and do good deeds, but people are always afraid of him. Casper first made his appearance in 1949 in shorts produced by Famous Studios. And I think, you know, other than the Nightmare Before Christmas thing that, you know, we both missed by watching Hulu, we get a musical parody. Mm-hmm. On top of just a parody of the character of Casper in general. And so I wanted to sing the song for anyone's reference at home, just to draw the comparison.
Okay. Do it.
Casper, the friendly ghost, the friendliest ghost you know. Though grown-ups might look at him with fright, the children all love him so. He always says hello. He's really glad to meet ya. Wherever he may go, he's kind to every living creature. Grown-ups don't understand why children love him the most, but kids all know he loves them so. Casper the Friendly Ghost.
Achoo!
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think the musical parody, they did the same thing in Animaniacs, and I think, like, there was a little bit in Tiny Toons, much more so in Animaniacs. There were musicians working there that really, really got how to make good parodies of songs, mm-hmm. where the melody was similar enough that you know exactly what it is, but it's really very different. Mm-hmm. But the big difference, I thought, between Casper and Sneezer is that Sneezer is completely oblivious to his effect on the living.
Yeah, yeah. Or the dead, for that matter. Once he gets swallowed up by Furball the ghost, he sneezes, blows him up, and he's like, oh, I lose more friends that way.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's like, what I think is really fun in this is if you know all the characters from Tiny Toons, mm-hmm. they've paired them all so well in the different segments. And, you know, just before we move on, I just want to point out there was a Ghostbusters reference in this one.
Yes, there was. Yeah. That's how Furball dies.
Yeah, exactly. He crossed the streams with a sneeze stream.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then we have Babs on the Moors. Mm-hmm. Do you know what this is referencing?
The Hounds of Baskerville?
You know, it's very interesting that you say that because I always thought it was too when I was little. And this is probably the only one that I didn't really get except for Fuel. But I thought that I got it because I thought it was a parody of The Hound of Baskervilles, the Sherlock Holmes story. But it's not. It is a parody of American Werewolf in London.
Oh.
Have you ever seen that?
Maybe a long, 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 long time ago.
You should definitely revisit it. It's a really great movie. It's a horror comedy. But the first clue that we get is the Ye Disgusting Pig, which the tavern in American Werewolf in London is the Slaughtered Lamb. But the people in the tavern are a whole lot nicer to Babs than they were to the guys in American Werewolf in London. Because they send them out to meet the werewolf. And in this, they try to keep Babs safe. But I think this is maybe my second favorite in this whole special, with either Hold That Ghost or Night of the Living Dull. It's kind of a three-way tie between those. But I love the Shingles Ballad.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. At least I'm not a clown.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't normally actively notice this in cartoons because it is such a ubiquitous thing. But it was very funny to me that the guy says that the town used to have 5,000 people in it, holding up his hand and he only has 3 fingers and a thumb. And Western cartoons traditionally only have 4 fingers or 3 fingers and a thumb, and this is because hands are very hard to draw, and it saves a lot of time to only draw 3 fingers and a thumb. So if you ever wondered why that was the case in a lot of Western animation, there's the answer.
There you go.
All right, so next is Fuel.
Yes.
Which we know is...
Duel.
Duel. One of Steven Spielberg's first movies. Now, did you watch it last night?
No.
No, you didn't. Okay, I don't know about you, but when I was little, I was vaguely aware of the horror movies about scary cars. Mm-hmm. And I thought maybe this was somehow referencing Christine or the car. And finally, I resolved that it must somehow be referencing Maximum Overdrive, because that's the only movie I'd ever seen with a scary 18-wheeler. Mm-hmm. It actually took me researching this right now to finally understand that it was a parody of Duel, which I did watch last night. And I would highly recommend it. It's great.
Yeah, I've seen one other 18-wheeler movie, and it was really bizarre. Apparently, the 18-wheeler was fueled on human flesh, and they would pick up people on the road and then, like, throw them into the back of the 18-wheeler, and that was the gas.
Weird.
But I have no idea what this movie was, what it's called, but I did watch it. I feel like it came on Sci-Fi.
So did you think that maybe this segment was a parody of that?
Oh, no. This was much more modern.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some really bad modern horror movies.
There really are. We watched a movie last night called Piranaconda.
Piranaconda! Is yes. that exactly what it sounds like?
Uh-huh.
All right, so then we have The Devil and Daniel Webfoot. Do you know what this is referencing?
Which one was that? Is that the Maximilian one?
Yes.
No.
Okay, so that's referencing The Devil and Daniel Webster, which is a short story by Stephen Vincent Benet, or Bennett, about a man that sells his soul to the devil and then gets lawyer Daniel Webster to represent him in court to try to save him from damnation. And then it's very patriotic, and Daniel Webster wins and saves him from the devil. Now,
well, that's not what happens in this one.
No, and I think the reason might be because Daniel Webster was an actual lawyer and orator from the 19th century. Mm. And he actually ran for president once, but he was not a very good person. He supported legislation that was pro-slavery. So I think that that might be why they have Daniel Webfoot go to hell with Monty in this segment.
That would make sense.
Yeah. That one, I think, might be one of my least favorite parts.
The plea of, well, he's a good American, that's why he shouldn't go to hell. I never got that as a device to win an argument.
Right. Well, I think it's making fun of the patriotism in that short story.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
But without knowing that, it just didn't make sense to me.
Right. So you know how, like, in The Jury, when Satan stacks the jury and one of them is a TV executive, and he says, I still say that Chevy Chase show could work. I don't know who that's supposed to be, but I looked up the Chevy Chase show, and it was a late night talk show in 1993. So this came out in 1994, so it was super relevant at the time, with Chevy Chase as the host, and it was canceled after only 5 weeks.
Oh, no.
And the network, Fox, has never seriously tried to produce a late-night talk show since.
Oh.
Yeah.
Gee. Ooh, what happened?
The only thing that I could really get from my brief read of the Wikipedia page was that the audiences were super unruly, and you couldn't really hear Chevy Chase very often. I don't know. Then we have Hold That Duck. Any guesses?
I'm going to say Hold That Ghost.
Yes. Very good.
Only because you said it earlier.
Did I?
When you were saying that the Babs one was your favorite, tied along with Night of the Living Dull and Hold That Ghost.
Oh. Funny. Okay. So, yeah, Hold That Duck is referencing Abbott and Costello in Hold That Ghost and Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. Mm. Just some background. Abbott and Costello were a super popular comedic duo in the 1940s and 50s. If you have ever heard the skit Who's On First, that was them. They made several movies, and with Abbott being kind of the angry stick in the mud and Costello as the humorous, nervous mess. So in Meet Frankenstein, they encounter all of the Universal monsters. It is a great Halloween movie. I would recommend it. In Hold That Ghost, they inherit a house from a mobster, and it has all sorts of false walls where people disguised as ghosts come out and scare Costello. Mm. And they are disguised because they're trying to find a fortune left by the mobster hidden in the house. Mm. And this movie does not hold up. But in both movies, there is an ongoing gag where scary stuff happens to Costello. He calls out for Abbott, but when Abbott gets there, the scary things have retreated.
Oh, Buster! Oh, Buster!
Exactly.
Sorry. I had to.
Okay, and then there's Night of the Living Dull. This one should be obvious.
Night of the Living Dead.
Ding, ding, ding.
My favorite part was the very end where the guy is like, but I have Willow on VHS, which to me, I love the movie Willow, but Nick finds it so boring. So I thought that part was so funny because Nick would be like, yes, this is Night of the Living Dull.
Yeah. That's hilarious. But this part really cracks me up. It's like the Wacky Land crew, which represent the zaniest of cartoon characters, are running from what the writers of Tiny Toons deem the most boring personalities.
Yeah, which they're really not the most boring. I've encountered much more boring personalities.
Yeah.
I mean, take Hampton in the very first segment when he's talking about the vacuum for a whole monologue.
I know. There's nothing like the plinkety plink of little fragments going around the beater bar and into the bag.
Well, you'd think that with a heavier light, the whole vacuum would be heavier. But really, it's not because of this reason and that reason, this reason. So really, it's not as heavy. And it's just like, oh my goodness, please. That is the Night of the Living Dull for me.
But it's so funny.
It is really funny.
But so you talked about the Tiny Toons world biggest fan who's there at the end.
Yes.
Now, there is a rumor, and I say rumor because I could not find sources that I feel substantiate this in any meaningful way, but I found stuff that indicates that the fan that was included as a caricature of someone that was obsessed with the characters voiced by Tress MacNeille, who sent her obscene fan mail and frightened her enough to cancel convention appearances.
Oh.
Yeah. Now, like I said, I couldn't find enough to convince me that this was real, but I thought that it could make an interesting segue to talk to you about your experiences as a voice actor.
Well, let me just say, I don't doubt that actually happened.
Okay.
I've experienced not something nearly to that degree, but I have experienced some fans that stepped over boundaries.
Mm.
We'll say.
So then we have Frank and Myra, which I don't even really think we need to say what this is referencing because it's very obvious.
It's Nightmare on Elm Street, right?
Night of the Opera. Wait, no. Phantom of the Opera.
Wow. Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, maybe?
Yeah. I think that this one ties with Daniel Webfoot, or maybe even outdoes it as my least favorite of the whole thing. I just really don't care that much about this one at all. But I do want to say that this is the second appearance of a classic Looney Tunes character. The first one was Hazel the Witch in Sneezer the Sneezy Ghost. And now we have the red monster with the white tennis shoes. And I've learned that his name is Gossamer, which I think is an incredible name.
Interesting. You know, I don't mind this one, but the voice of Gossamer is what ruins it for me. For some reason, it just doesn't connect.
Yeah.
And as soon as he speaks, I lose attention.
Yeah. What is your least favorite part?
Of the whole thing?
Mm-hmm.
Probably the Maximilian one.
Daniel Webfoot.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I get that. Okay, so that brings us to the last segment of this Halloween special. The one with Plucky Duck on the airplane.
Yes.
So, what is this?
I actually don't know what this film is, but I know that it's referenced in a lot of things, including Bridesmaids, but I don't know the name of the original.
Great. Well, let me enlighten you. I'm very excited. So it's a combined parody, just like Hold That Duck. Mostly, it's a parody of a famous Twilight Zone episode called Terror at 20,000 Feet, which William Shatner stars in.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Everything's falling into place now. So that's why it is loaded with Star Trek references.
Well,
and why Plucky talks like Captain Kirk.
Yeah, yeah.
So now that you know that, I wanted to share a quick story about Terror at 20,000 Feet. So last summer, I went to a wedding in Oregon. And when I was flying back, I had downloaded this episode on my phone to watch on the airplane while we were in the air.
That seems like a smart plan.
It was actually really fun. I felt like I didn't want anybody to see my screen either.
Yeah. You're going to start a panic.
There's a little strange man on the wing. Whatever he says. I don't know.
There's an old colonial woman sitting on the wing of the plane.
An old colonial woman.
That's Bridesmaids.
Oh. So we talked about Gossamer and Hazel, and I wanted to point out that we now have the third character from an old Looney Tunes cartoon in this segment, and that's the Gremlin. And the Gremlin is from a Bugs Bunny short called Falling Hair, a wartime episode from 1943, working off of the folklore that the mythical creatures called gremlins caused mechanical problems in airplanes. The stories were popularized in World War II, primarily by the United Kingdom Royal Air Force, where gremlins were blamed for inexplicable issues during flights. Now, I found this very interesting. The short Falling Hair was meant to be titled Bugs Bunny and the Gremlin, but Disney was in the process of adapting a Roald Dahl book called The Gremlins that he had specifically written for Disney. And Disney asked all of the other studios to refrain from making Gremlin content because they were doing this. But Warner Brothers was already way into the production of the short, so they just retitled the cartoon as a compromise as Falling Hair. Sadly, the Gremlins movie was never completed, but maybe it should be.
Oh.
Get your act together, Disney.
Disney, you don't monopolize fun and you have to get your act together.
Yeah. I am now the one waving my finger at you, Disney.
I'm sure they're shaking in their boots.
This is the one finger that animators don't draw. Pointed your direction. Well, that sounds like a middle finger. That's not what I meant. It's my index finger.
It was your index finger. I'll make that clear. I saw it. Index finger. All right.
So I know that was a bit of a tangent, but I hope it was an interesting one.
Yeah.
And that's really all I have.
It's a really fun short. I really, really enjoy Tiny Toons. That's all I have to say. I just enjoy it so much. It makes me giggle. I don't, as an adult, I haven't really watched a lot of cartoons. I'll watch anime. I mean, especially since I'm in it, I have to do research and this, that, and the other. And I really enjoy anime, but I don't really watch a lot of cartoons. But the past two times that I've watched the Vacation one, Summer Vacation, and now Night Ghoulery, I've just enjoyed it so much and I've laughed out loud so much.
It's so funny. And the characters are so well designed.
Yeah.
And the vocal talent is incredible.
When I watched How I Spent My Summer Vacation, I sent you a message saying, hey, I think that this is the next one that I want to cover on your show. So,
well, this is close.
It's close. It's close. I mean, I have a list of like 30 movies that I want to cover on your show. So,
and you're going to list them all right now.
Well, no.
All right. Well, we're going to pop over to the party now, unless you have anything else to say.
Nope. That's all I got.
Thank you. And here we go. We are here at the Memory Static Party for Tiny Toons Night Ghoulery. And welcome, everybody. And in addition to me, Chaney wasn't able to make it to this party, but I'm still here. And we also are joined by Ali Stuckey from the Watcher in the Woods episode, Aaron Brothers from the Gay Puri episode,
Ali.
Sean Stone for the Mr. Boogity and Bride of Boogity double feature episode.
Hello.
And Kate Windsor from the Phantom Toll Booth, and Cullen that writes all the music for Memory Static.
What will my episode be? Who knows?
Who knows? Maybe sometime really soon. Let's just jump right in.
I mean, I remember watching Tiny Toons, and I was just really grateful that in the song they actually explain what each character is, because I couldn't remember, and I was like, oh, that's a nice touch.
Yeah, that's great to be reintroduced to the characters before diving right into it.
Exactly, because otherwise I would have been really lost.
I did not grow up with Tiny Toons, and we had to pause the episode in the middle so that Cullen could explain to me why all these characters were weirdly similar to the Looney Tunes, but not.
So if you're confused, to reiterate, they're tiny, they're toony, they're all a little loony, and in this cartoony, they're invading your TV.
I mean, that's a pretty good explanation.
Yeah.
Thank you. You're welcome.
So how about y'all that had seen it before?
Well, you know, I know that I've seen this before, and I remember the Telltale Vacuum really, really clearly. Like, there were certain lines. I really like the script in that, how it's kind of playing with Poe's original flowery language and just doing all these, like, this ridiculous alliteration and stuff that's just so stilted and, like, turned on its head, and it's really good. Because he even says, my plan was so ingenious, so brilliant, so really, really good. And I felt that line coming, you know, like, that whole scene was really nostalgic for me. But oddly enough, I didn't really remember any of the other bits, except I felt like I recognized the monster that Elmira made, but I almost feel like that character was in something else.
It's from Looney Tunes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Bailey and I, we love Looney Tunes and Tiny Tunes and WB. And I know that, like, whenever they have any kind of Halloween feature, that was always really exciting to me. Like, I loved Halloween. And I loved the costumes and dressing up and trick-or-treating. And so I always looked forward to October and when these Halloween features were going to come out. And so having something that was Tiny Toons, that was a Halloween feature, was just a lot of fun. And I do love, like, the references. She's like, more, Mary Tyler Moore or Roger Moore. Or, you know, there is these adult jokes. As a 9-year-old, I'm just sitting there watching Tiny Toons. I'm thinking on the surface kind of stuff. I'm not thinking of Edgar Allan Poe. That's not on my register at this point. But as a 34-year-old, you know, I've gone through school and stuff like that. And I've learned stuff now that's made this even more fun to watch, you know, as an adult.
It's funny because, like, I remember distinctly watching this. And I was a creepy kid extraordinaire. And so it's always cool to see things that you know being referenced. And I was also kind of a throwback kid too. So I remember really liking, like, the Telltale Vacuum is a Telltale Heart, even though that honestly should be called Plucky's a Terrible Roommate. Who breaks a vacuum? They are expensive.
Yeah.
And then manhandles a duck into being the vacuum.
They obviously never defined their boundaries. Like, obviously, maybe Plucky could have just voiced his needs and said, hey, can you only vacuum between this hour and this hour? Because beyond that, it's driving me a little crazy.
Right? It's pretty simple, but, like, to murder a vacuum, like, you're a bad roommate, Plucky. You got what was coming to you.
I don't know, though, because it might be that Plucky just had this aggression inside him that needed a target, and he latched on to the vacuum. Because, like, there wasn't... Once the vacuum was dead, that didn't make his problem go away. It was still there. You know, he still had that need to be violent.
Bailey, the Quacky skit where he's on the airplane, what was that parody?
You call him Quacky?
What's
Plucky.
Plucky.
Quacky Dack.
What was that a parody of? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
It was a Twilight Zone episode called terror at 20,000 feet.
Plucky was tripping out on that airplane. And I love that her butt was what clogged up the...
Uhura?
clogged up the window. That was my favorite one. I just love that he's sitting here hallucinating this gremlin. Right now, people are already freaked out about flying. And like, if somebody freaks out on an airplane, it's a huge deal, right? You see it on the news. So I'm just thinking, like, in real life, what it would be like if somebody's on a plane freaking out because they think there's some gremlin on the plane trying to destroy the plane, and what kind of chaos that would cause. And in the midst of all that chaos, he breaks the window and everybody sleeps right through it. I don't know what all those people took, but they slept right through all of that. So I just really love the humor in that one. I thought it was really funny.
I actually really liked the sneezing mouse ghost.
Oh, yeah.
Mainly because Witch Hazel is in it, and she is my all-time favorite Looney Tune.
She's great. I love that every time she skedaddles out of a room, she leaves behind bobby pins.
I see myself in that. I do. I really do. I also like this segment because I will note that the Jerry, or the Tom character, ends up being a double dead ghost.
That's very true.
He's like, actually a parody on Sylvester the cat, not Tom the cat. Same difference.
I don't think he was supposed to be Sylvester, because I think he might have been supposed to be Tom. Because if it were Sylvester, it would have been paired with Tweety, right?
Yeah, Sneezy.
But Tom isn't a Looney Tune.
Oh, yeah.
There is an equivalent of Tweety that just didn't show up in this special.
Yeah, she's a pink canary. I can't think of her name. Sweetie.
I never liked Tweety anyway. I always wanted Sylvester to eat him. I'm rooting for the bad guys forever, y'all.
I liked the Duel parody. What was it called?
Fuel.
I liked that one. And the reason is, I was actually forced to watch that movie in seventh grade by my English teacher. The Duel, not Fuel. Because she was trying to teach us about symbolism. And I remember having to write an essay on it and everything.
What was the symbolism that she was trying to point out?
You had to, literally every little thing. Like, I got marked off because I didn't notice that at the beginning, when the credits are rolling, they go through a tunnel and it's rebirth or something. It was bullshit, honestly. So I have like a hatred of that movie because I was forced to do this pointless exercise, but I should watch it again.
Well, I have to say, after watching it, I find the parody a whole lot funnier, because the part where a Calamity Coyote goes into the bar and shows all the people looking at him, and then the 18-wheeler turns and looks from the bar. Because there's this whole scene in the movie where the character that's being harassed by the 18-wheeler from Duel is sitting in the bar and staring at all the people, and he can't figure out who the driver is. So that's really funny now that I understand it.
I laughed out loud at that part. And, you know, sometimes you watch stuff like this and you laugh at your casual adult observations. And sometimes it's really rare for you just to laugh out loud about something that's just part of the show. And I literally slapped the table like, like an old man.
I think that my favorite was probably the Terror of Tedium.
You mean the Night of the Living Doll?
The Night of the Living Doll.
The Terror of Tedium. What was it that you liked about that, Kate?
It was Night of the Living Dead is one of the references that I've actually seen. So I knew that it was supposed to be scary, and I thought it was pretty accurate to the characters that the one thing they were actually terrified of was this boring stuff, like in Animaniacs.
My favorite scene is probably still the first one, the Telltale Vacuum. I think that's probably my favorite of the skits, but I really also like the running gag that Plucky Duck doesn't talk normally for the entire episode, because there's those two scenes where he's having like that really stilted language, and then Hampton even comments, like, are you going to talk normally at all this special, Plucky? and he doesn't. Like, when he has the bit with Buster, he spins the entire thing stuttering and stammering and doing it, and then, like, when he has the scene on the plane, he's still not talking normally. He's talking like he's in Star Trek. I don't know. I thought that was a good little through line for me, anyway.
Let's go back to Babs on the Moors, which is one of my favorites, because I think that the shingle song is hilarious.
The guys in the bar are like, that's the best version of the shingle song I've ever heard.
I really do like the implication that this is like a cultural standard song for these people.
It's not only the season of Halloween, it's shingle song season. Sorry, it's like
shingle season.
Who wrote that? Like, who wrote that though? Who was like, you know what kids will think's funny?
Shingles.
But you know what's funny is that this came out a year before I got shingles. So like, maybe not the first time I watched this, but definitely like maybe the next year when I watched this, it was actually very meaningful for me.
You were like,
I was like, yes, but at least I'm not a clown.
So funny to me.
So in that segment, they figure out that the only way to keep the devil dog at bay is to wear antlers, which someone in the bar named Sean figures out quite accidentally, as they say. So how do you think he discovered this? Because I think that that line and leaving it ambiguous is so funny.
Well, I would turn that question to those in the room who grew up in families that hunt.
So I grew up in one of those families, and being in nature, when you come across a wild beast, they say you should appear like big, scary, dangerous in some fashion. So maybe Sean's hanging out and the devil dog approaches him and here's these antlers hanging on his wall from his hunt. So he throws them on his head and starts making some beast noises, you know, trying to be as scary as he can. And it works. The cute little basset hound that's also a devil dog moseys on away and he survives. Small town superstition says if it worked once, it's going to work all the time. So you better wear your antlers.
I take one issue with your explanation. And that's that they said that he accidentally found out that that worked, which implied that he was already wearing the antlers. And then the devil dog came up.
So here's yes. What happened, okay? I was there. I witnessed. What they didn't tell you in this episode is that Sean is quite a booze hound, okay? And so he's hanging out at the bar, and as most bars of this ilk have, a lot of dead accoutrement on the wall. And so, you know, Sean was traipsing about getting quite toasted, and the hound starts baying and everyone's freaking out, and he runs into the wall and the antlers fall on his head as the hound busts into the bar and eats everybody except Sean.
So quite by accident.
Quite by accident.
That is accidental for sure.
Well, what Erin won't tell you is that much like Sean, she was also toasted on the cranberry juice.
Wicked on it.
As the designated cart driver for the bar, I can tell you my cranberry-less account went more like this. It is true that Sean was wearing elk antlers, but you might have the question, why is it that they have to look like elk and not just any woodland creature? And the truth is that this event was a hunter's masquerade, where everyone was wearing their pelts and antlers from different woodland creatures, and they discovered when the hound started baying and came in that the only people who were not eaten were those who were wearing elk antlers.
I mean, obviously Colin remembers better than I do, because I was crazy on the cranberry.
I'd like to add one more addendum to that story, that although it's true that Colin did not drink any cranberry juice, he was wasted on whiskey.
You know, the weirdest thing was I was running security that night and the cameras didn't pick up anything. This is probably like a big conspiracy. Because somebody obviously, like, made sure that the cameras wouldn't catch any of this.
Well, let me ask you, security officer, were the cameras dressed as elk?
I mean, that's their uniform, so, yeah, like, not by choice.
We need to have these questions. People need to question what really happened. And I know y'all all said you were there, but Cullen was drunk on whiskey. Aaron drank too much cranberry. And Allie, like, she wasn't paying attention. She was doing her job at the door, you know, but
I was in the back watching the cameras, you know.
Somehow
I had to take a phone call, so I was outside, missed it, which is why I'm asking.
You know, and Sean, who can trust what he says? He was right there where Aaron was on the cranberry. So somehow he got himself into a really lucky situation.
Okay, so if your house was infested with ghosts of mice, what would you do?
Nothing.
You just let them be?
They aren't eating the food or pooping, so that's my main concern when it comes to mice.
How do you befriend a ghost mouse? How do you befriend a ghost, first of all? I guess ghosts are there because they have, like, unfinished business. So, like, how can I help this ghost mouse complete his unfinished business so he can move on to the next phase of his non-life, you know?
Maybe and there was a type of cheese it never got to try.
You know, like, is it one of those funky French cheeses or, like, is he into gorgonzola? Like, do I need to, like, kill some cheese?
Yeah, I have notes on that, actually. So what you need to do is you draw a small cheese-sized pentagram and light some tiny candles around it. Then you take your cheese and you sacrifice it to the blood gods. And that allows the cheese to pass into the afterlife, not having finished its cheese business. And then you allow the ghost of the mouse to eat the ghost of the cheese, and then they can both evaporate peacefully into the afterlife.
I would say Sneezy's not that bad of a ghost to have around. Like, they just want to have a friend.
Yeah, but every time it sneezes, like, the walls blow away.
Sometimes my house or room gets a little cluttered, if you will. Or I have three dogs here, so we have lots of dog hair around. So if I had a sneezing ghost mouse around every once in a while, maybe he could just blast one of those sneezes, blow all my clutter out of the way, and then, like, boom, I don't have to clean. So, like, maybe I'm just going to befriend this mouse, give him a purpose, so, you know, around the house. You know, maybe that's all he wants, mm-hmm. is a job, something to do.
Can I send the ghost mice out as, like, errand mice to terrorize, say, like, political figures?
I mean, mice and rats are very easily trained. So I think because they're ghost mice, there's no time limit on how much time it takes to train them to do something. So I mean, anything is possible.
You've spent a lot of time with rats. How would you feel about having a ghost mouse?
Well, I mean, I don't think it would bother me that much. I think that, you know, especially if they were friendly and didn't, you know, keep me awake at night.
All your rats loved you. I have no doubt that if you had a ghost mouse, it would love you too.
Oh, thanks, Sean.
Yeah.
So if you were Dr. Frankenmyra and you were bringing a creation to life, would you use a random brain or part of your own?
I would use my own brain. Because I'm obviously not going to make enough jokes that will land here, but at least I'll create something that will actually think I'm funny. Like that joke should have been.
We all just need a monster made with our own brain to laugh at our jokes sometimes.
You would never have to explain your jokes, ever.
I think I'm a little too crazy. I feel like this world's good with just one Sean Stone. And so I'd feel like taking part of my brain and trying to put it into some monster that I'm going to bring back to life. Like, there's too much of a wild card there. I'd rather, like, roll the dice and take a random brain.
Well, I work at a neurotech company, and so I'm not a scientist, but I've gotten to see the science in action a lot. I think I would go with another brain until I had a good model, and then maybe go with my own, you know, once it was proven out. It's the boring answer.
No, but that's a good way to go about it.
But you're still using a random brain initially. So my question is, what is the cohort that we're drawing from?
I was thinking, you know, some clone creature that we could control for.
Right. So that would be ideal, but not the prompt.
Well, the prompt is flexible. We can make it whatever we want.
I was thinking more in terms of, I'd use a random brain if there was any risk inherent in the procedure. I'd de-risk it before using it on myself because I'm selfish.
But we're also using Looney Tune logic, and like Wile E. Coyote like literally has pianos fall on his head and like runs into canyons that are painted on rocks.
Well, it may be boring. It's been a hard day.
If you had to live for, I don't want to say eternity, but like 50 years within one segment of this cartoon, what would it be?
I'd go with Hold That Duck, because those monsters seem pretty chill once you get to know them, and there's a mansion and a garage.
And you get to explore all of those false walls.
That piece of property alone looks really expensive. I want to live in that house.
I'd probably go with the Babs on the Moors, because, you know, like, as long as you wear your antlers, you just get to hang out and drink cranberry juice and sing songs about shingles. It's not a bad life.
Yeah, I was going to say the same one because I already have a job there.
So. I mean, I've already lived that life, so I'm not going to pick that one. It's like spicing it up a little bit. I think I'd pick Daniel Webfoot because I would steal Montana Max's money.
After he was pulled to hell.
Oh, yeah.
I think I would go with Sneezer the Sneezy Ghost.
Really?
That's the most convenient one.
Maybe so, but, you know, like, it might be really interesting figuring out how to be a roommate with Hazel. She could teach me some pretty cool stuff.
Hazel could probably get rid of the mouse herself.
That's true. If she really wanted it gone, she really didn't need Furball to do it for her.
What if it's just like a conspiracy for Hazel to get rid of the cat? Oh my God, y'all.
You know, and I understand why you were thinking it was Tom and Jerry, because it is set up like a Tom and Jerry cartoon.
It's where like a Tom and like Jerry cartoon.
You know, the human is like, get rid of this mouse.
Totally backfires on him with the Ghostbuster get up. And he totally thought he was going to get rid of that mouse with the cage. And then the mouse dismembered himself, like, right in front of him. Like, that'd be spooky, but then he sneezes right after, so it'd be kind of cute. So, like, you know, I could see myself hanging out in that house. For 50 years? That's a long time.
Yeah, I guess that is a long time, 50
That's
years.
A long time.
Well, thank you all so much for taking your time to watch this and talk about it with me. This was so much fun. Y'all are all very funny, and I love you all so much. And this concludes our Halloween specials for this 2020 Halloween. Until next time, this has been Memory Static. Return your videos here.
Return your videos here. Happy Halloween.
Return your videos here.
Thank you for listening to Memory Static. This episode was produced and edited by me, Bailey Moore. Special thanks to Chaney Moore for joining me on these three Halloween specials, and thank you to all of our Zoom party guests. All music was written in collaboration by me and Cullen Moore, and you can find more of Cullen's music by searching plaidtuxedo.com. If you have any personal stories you'd like to add to any of our Zoom parties, email me at memorystatic@gmail.com. The next time you hear from me, it may very well be a return to the normal second season, so stay tuned for that. That's about it. Happy Halloween!
untrue it is.